Hello, I'm Evan Novi Williams.
And I'm Michael Barr. We're missing Scott Soschnick. This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. And today we begin with an earth-shattering story in the NBA. The league is trying to defuse a political firestorm in China. The league is apologizing after the general manager of the Houston Rockets tweeted his support for protesters in Hong Kong.
Yeah, let's catch listeners up on where we are right now, and then we'll talk about kind of what's behind it. Daryl Morey, very popular GM of the Houston Rockets, a team that is probably the most popular team in China right now from an NBA perspective, largely because of Yao Ming and his history with the franchise. He tweeted very briefly and then deleted it, fight for freedom, stand with Hong Kong, over the weekend. It was very quickly refuted by his owner, Tillman Fertitta, who owns the Rockets. He said, you know, this is not an opinion that everyone at the Rockets has. This is not an opinion that the NBA has. And then everything went bananas.
James Harden apologized. James Harden has now
apologized. The Rockets are losing business interest in China from a pair of sponsors. CCTV, which is the state-sponsored television network, has said it won't air Rockets games. Tencent, which is the publishing, the digital broadcaster partner for the NBA, they're saying that they may not show Rockets games. A lot of things are falling apart very quickly, and the NBA seems to be trying to put the pieces together in a very specific way to keep everybody happy.
The NBA cannot win this. This is a no-win situation for them. It doesn't make a difference what they do, because if they side with China, then you're going to get people like Senator Ted Cruz. He's saying, well, why in the world are we doing this? China is holding us hostage for democracy. If the NBA sides with Hong Kong, you lose even more than Tencent. You lose a lot of sponsorship. There's no win for the NBA.
Yeah, you're right. The NBA is in the impossible position of wanting neutrality. And the only way to achieve that is to be totally silent. And unfortunately, Daryl Morey was not silent. And as a result, you know, NBA commissioner and other people within the league have taken, you know, the other position in some ways. And now, you know, it's becoming what side is the NBA on? And Joe Tai, who owns the Brooklyn Nets, he bought a controlling stake about a month ago. He is Chinese. He is the co-founder of e-commerce giant over in China, Tencent. He put out, I don't know if you read it, a 750-word open letter to NBA fans, essentially detailing the history that I think a lot of Chinese people feel about foreign oppression and territory, their territory, kind of details Opium War, Boxer Rebellion, the Rape of Nanking, kind of goes through all the ways in which Chinese people feel as though their territory and their sovereignty is a very sensitive issue. So he kind of laid out the reason why NBA fans in China might be offended, upset, hurt, livid, all those things with what Daryl Morey tweeted.
I'm not making fun of all of what's going down, but Josiah probably had the best comment where he said Morey stepped on a third rail issue in this involved, because now, as you said, I mean, this is very sensitive here in China and obviously sensitive in Hong Kong also.
Yeah, and we can talk about some of the money here, right? So the NBA says that over 500 million fans in China watched at least one game last year, right? That is a huge, but to put that in perspective, there's 300 some million people in the U.S., people total, right? So the opportunity, business opportunity for the NBA in China is enormous, right? The Tencent deal that is the streaming deal alone, it's a $1.5 billion deal over five years, right? Yeah. All these teams are, you know, they have people that, you know, focus on social media in China. The players, Steph Curry, you know, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, they go to China consistently. It's a huge market for them. There's so much, there's billions probably of dollars of interest, especially looking forward for the NBA in China, right? So finding some kind of medium that doesn't alienate those fans appears to be A1, the top level issue right now for Adam Silver. I think the problem that they're running into is that the NBA, at least domestically, is very progressive, right? And I think it prides itself on being progressive, right? Players are allowed to speak out. It's encouraged in a way that other sports have not really encouraged it. But, you know, I think a lot of the people that appreciate the way that, you know, when and the Miami Heat take the floor and I can't breathe shirts, the people that appreciate that the NBA allows them to make that statement, I think are now upset perhaps that when somebody makes a comment that could be a similar political line somewhere else, the NBA is willing to crack down on it so much.
We could go on another 3 hours on this, but we got to move on. Up next, after a 10-day service stalemate, prevented thousands of subscribers from watching Thursday Night Football, the dispute between Fox and Dish Network has officially come to a close.
Nothing like a Cowboys-Packers game to get everybody in line, right? We talked a little bit about this when it first started about 2 weeks ago. For a while, you know, millions of subscribers across the country on Dish and their digital partner Sling didn't have access to any of the local Fox channels or, you know, Fox's sports broadcast, right? So FS1, FS2, Big Ten Network. As these things often happen, it was played out in the press, right? There were press releases from both sides bashing the other. There were commercials about, you know, the reason why Fox is preventing you from watching your NFL games this week. But in the end, as we see with a lot of these disputes, you know, maybe most famously when Jeremy Lin went crazy for the Knicks a number of years ago, people want to watch their sports, and if there are big games on the horizon, the pressure from fans who can't watch from their couch is pretty large.
And sadly, this is not going to stop. How many times do we see this over and over and over again where you get the blackout? I mean, we've gone through this with the Dodgers. We've gone through so many places where there have been broadcast rights issues. It seems like there is no end in sight for, okay, this is the ultimate settlement.
It's kind of a function of the new media landscape, right? The fact that so many people are cutting the cord, they're not subscribing to cable as much anymore. But cable companies, one of the main ways they make money are these carriage fees, the deals that, you know, they get from, you know, broadcasters to air their channels. So, you know, it's becoming much more sensitive, and sports, as we talk about all the time, right, is one of those things that is, you know, DVR proof in some ways, right? So as much as people are going to Netflix for their TV shows or their movies, you know, they're not going to Netflix for their sports, right? A lot of people still need that on live TV. So they become kind of the catalyst inside these deals.
One thing about it before we move on is that one thing about sports compared to any other event, maybe except like watching an award show like the Emmys or the Oscars, it's something that everybody shares at the same time. And that's something that's very important because you don't want, that's one thing about DVR something, and I can't do it anymore because I'll try to DVR something and then someone will slip and tell me who won the Indy 500. It's hard to do. So that's something that everybody wants to share at the same time.
Yeah,
sports.
And no coincidence that, you know, one of the biggest matchups the NFL can put on the field, Packers Cowboys, was the game, you know, the national game that led to this thing not being this thing, you know, reaching an agreement and letting that be broadcast to all the people around the country.
And finally, let's talk about Sports Illustrated laying off many of its longtime writers and journalists in a move that makes the future of the storied magazine look pretty bleak.
Oh, yeah. It's unfortunately, we don't have enough time to really dive into all of it. I recommend people who are curious. Deadspin did a really well-reported piece on kind of what the future of Sports Illustrated looks like. But, you know, we've talked a little bit on this show before. You know, the property has been sold a number of times. Meredith had it for a while, publishing company. They sold part of it to Authentic Brands, which is a company that licenses brands for other things, right? And so they're going to do what I believe are going to be, you know, maybe Sports Illustrated basketball camps or, you know, Sports Illustrated line of sports equipment, things like that, branding the name for things that are not journalism. And then this group, The Maven, which is very controversial within media circles, they're handling the actual publishing side of Sports Illustrated. And it seems like part one of the plan happened last week, which you said, which was a pretty hefty round of layoffs for a number of their writers. Reports, according to Deadspin, it seems as though the next plan is to build out a massive content network essentially across the country where people are, you know, creating content very much like, and this is, again, controversial, but like SB Nation was a number of years ago, right?
Right.
Where people were not paid particularly much. There was a lot of requirements for how much they needed to post. The quality was not very good as a result of just the pressure to get things out. And there are now a number of class action lawsuits against that model. So, you know, certainly the Sports Illustrated of, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago, I think it's fair to say essentially doesn't exist anymore in its current
And that's format. You've made a very good point. 10, 20, 30 years ago, and I guess the best way I can compare it, back in the day, here I go, you got a lot of your sports content, even before ESPN, with Wide World of Sports. I mean, it was a very high-rated show at the time. Everything was consolidated in those 2 hours. Sports Illustrated. It's where everybody wanted to read about it. You got this magazine where I can check up on all my sports. But now we have things. We got blogs. We've got different other sites as well. And maybe it just hit that time.
Yeah, and the news cycle has changed, right? I mean, there was a time when, you know, every Thursday you could open Sports Illustrated and catch up on the sports. And the truth is that, you know, right now, every hour there's something new happening. The story develops over time. This NBA China story that we just discussed in 24 hours is probably going to be a very different story, right? And having to do that in weekly increments is not easy, right? So the magazine model obviously has to change. But the question kind of remains, was there a way to do this under Sports Illustrated in a way that didn't, you know, gut it in the way that it's been gutted? What were the mistakes made in the past that kind of led us to this point? All that. But, you know, certainly kind of sad to see Sports Illustrated, which was such a giant, a behemoth in the sports media world for so long, kind of heading into this next phase of its lifestyle.
Agreed. This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast. I'm Michael Barr, along with Evan Novy Williams.
We're here each and every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday exploring the world of money and sports. And you can join us at the end of the week when we speak with the biggest and brightest in the sports business world.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports on Bloomberg Radio, around the world and online, wherever you get your podcasts.